I want to get back to routines. How do we embody the important principles that allow us to come out the other end with the things that make life meaningful? Bill used to have a shed and he had a welder in it, and he used to fix stuff up and make furniture and do sculptures, all sorts of things through this welding kit. He had a great big country shed, you know, full of, you know, all sorts of stuff that his wife thought should have been thrown in the rubbish, you know, years ago, that sort of shed. And of course now they've moved to their beautiful, nice new house. They only have a garage. And he said, I was in Bunnings one day snooping around. He must have a little bit of joy in life. And he saw this really cheap welding set. He said, gee, I could do a bit with that. And then he stopped and thought, I've got nowhere to put it. You see, and so he actually thinks now, after we've, you know, things are getting going for him, but it's taken us quite a while for him to actually realise what's going on for himself. He's saying, you know, I think we probably bought our house too quickly and got on this track of actually realising we don't want to be there. It would have been better, I think, if we'd rented until we knew what we wanted. See, because they were actually doing what they thought they should do. It takes people quite a while until you know what you want. And so by building a house that doesn't have a big shed, he precludes the possibility of him doing any welding or fiddling in his shed or that thing which gave him enjoyment. So he's lost an enjoyment, hasn't he? He also said that when he took his dog for the walk, he knew it was good for the dog, but he never enjoyed it. He said, I'd see these little tracks going off into the bush. He didn't know this area that well. And he'd look up there and say, that's interesting, I wonder where that goes. And then he'd say to me, but I'd never go up there. Why not, I asked. I don't know, I just didn't have the confidence. I thought I might get myself lost or something. You see how that lack of confidence in his judgment is preventing him from doing anything like exploring. So it's loss of quality of life. Now, how do we get this meaning into our lives? Well, the conclusion I've come to is that we have to create routine activities around what's important to us that express what is important to us. Let me use a very simple example. Let's say you have a couple who've got some kids, and it's part of their values to really give their attention to their kids and bring them up well and take good care of them and really think about their problems and help them through all their issues. And so they find that being concerned about their kids, they sort of fall into a bit of a routine where they tell the kids to go and do their homework or watch television or something, and they do the washing up, and then they sit down in the kitchen, have a cup of tea while the kids are off somewhere else, and they have a bit of a chat about, you know, how the kids are going and who's going to talk to the school about Mary's homework and what will we do about Billy who refuses to do, make his bed in the morning, and, you know, and coordinate things and think about that. Now, that's a routine, isn't it? They don't have to think about that. It just happens as they fall into that routine. They don't need to do it every day, but, you know, it becomes a bit of a routine. If they miss out on over a little while, they say, we better just have a chat about the kids because, you know, you're doing something different to me or whatever. And they fall back into it. So the routine doesn't have to be rigid, but it's a set of activities that give expression to that value they have about being parents. Now, all you'd have to do for them to lose that completely would be to stick them in a caravan for 2 years, wouldn't you? Or have them living with their in-laws. Well, I don't want to speak against any in-laws we've got here, but, you know, or to be in an environment where they didn't have that little bit of privacy as part of their daily routine. They wouldn't talk about the kids, would they? They'd lose that ability to step back and reflect and get together on it. And they wouldn't know where it'd come from. So what happens? I mean, I'm just making up a story. So what happens? towards the end of the second year, the parents are squabbling after dinner again because they've been living in one single room for too long. And the 12-year-old girl says, "Listen, will you two just shut up? Dad, you sit down there. Mum, you sit down there. I've got a test tomorrow. I've got to do this homework." And she's running the family. And so she's not going to do what she told when they move back in, is she? Because she's been the responsible one. And, you know, you get a whole sort of change in the structure of relationships during this period, because they've lost that routine where the parents hold on to their ability to stop and reflect and be mature and think about things. So in this way, I think we probably don't really know what the important routines are if they're working. And so one of the strategies would be to actually sort of, over the next few weeks, and I'm not just talking about people who've had their property burned or their houses lost, this is going to have a much wider impact on people's lives than just where the flames go. There are lots of invisible connections between community members. And just have a look and try to notice this element of disruption. What's been disrupted? And what are you in danger of losing from that? And how do you protect it? And I reckon one of the most valuable things we can do is create mulling time for us. Mulling time? We haven't got time for that sort of nonsense. Can't you realise we've got all these fences to build and houses to get fixed up and insurance companies to do? We haven't got time for that sort of nonsense. No, you can't afford not to, because you need it in order to get things into perspective, to realise what your real priorities are, and to make good long-term plans. You see, the problem is the political pressure will be try and get this done quickly. Right? That makes good sense economically, and Treasury can't hold their budget strings open indefinitely and so on and so forth. But from the psychosocial point of view, I think take it slowly. Take it slowly. You're going to run a marathon, not a 200 metres hurdles as a community. Take it slowly. Don't try and say, "I'll take a deep breath, put my head down and go like hell." I talked to a group of dairy farmers in the Bay of Plenty in New Zealand several times over a two-year period. And, you know, we talked about these issues, stress and so on, a number of times. And they started to get the message. And my last visit was 2 years after their flood. And one of the guys said to me, "You know, with what I understand now about stress and what it does to our brains, when I look back, the first few months after the flood, I worked from dawn till dusk on my tractor, and I made enormous demands on my wife and you know, brothers and people came to help him, and they just worked their butts off. Exhausted ourselves," he said. "But now when I look back, most of that work had to be redone and was a complete waste of time because it wasn't planned and thought out and done." Now, I don't know what his details were, we didn't have a chance to talk about, but I imagine, for instance, because what happens there when you get those floods is that all the pastures just swept away and they've got gravel beds, and it's going to take several years for grass to grow on them again. So I don't know, he probably had a fence knocked down. He thought, "Geez, I've got to get that fence up." So he just gets the fence up. But in fact, it's fencing a great lump of gravel that he can't really use. And that paddock has to be redesigned, and the fence really needs to be replaced somewhere else, which he would only work out by being a bit creative, you know? If I can't use that area, how will I restructure my paddock so that I can move my cow? I don't know what the details are, but, you know, you've got to think laterally. Now, let me just talk a little bit about the stress state. So we talked about trauma, loss and disruption. If we take it, it's not a nice, neat sequence, but I'll describe it as though it is. So when the fire comes, we feel under threat. And our brains have got a capacity to fire us into, I call it, emergency mode. in response to a tangible, immediate threat. And the way it does that is to saturate us with adrenaline. Now, I hope we haven't got any neurophysiologists in the house, but I'm simplifying the story, but let's just call it adrenaline. Adrenaline, you know what adrenaline does. It gets you really heart thumping and you get fired up. Now, what adrenaline does is flood your system with the reserves of energy that we have stored away. And it increases the blood pressure and the heart rate. It puts extra red blood cells into your system, and it actually hardens and contracts the veins so that it pushes the blood through the heart much quicker than it normally goes. So the amount of blood that's in the arterial system carrying energy out to our muscles doubles, and it's all supercharged with additional energy in reserve. So you really do have that incredible increase in power. I remember just one simple little example, a woman telling me she and her husband were in their holiday house near the beach, and a fire came down the hill towards it, and he went off with the local men to try and deal with the fire and said to his wife, "You better grab the kids and all the valuables and head back to the city." So she packed everything in the car, and she was about to back out of the carport, and she noticed the brand new generator that they had brought down just for such an occasion. She thought, well, that's brand new, I'm not going to leave that. So she whacked it in the back of the station wagon, drove home. When she got home, she couldn't move it. Right? She couldn't lift it. She had to wait 3 days till her husband came home, and with difficulty they both lifted it out again like they had when they'd arrived, you see. Because when we're on adrenaline, we don't ask, can I do this? We ask what needs to be done. So this gives us an enormous advantage. What the emergency mode does is redistribute our resources into those functions that will help us survive a physical challenge. Muscles and the ability to think very clearly about an immediate concrete problem. In fact, what happens is the adrenaline stimulates the right side of our brain where we think in pictures. But it's much harder to think in words and concepts, which is why if you've made a very beautiful 4-page fire plan with a whole lot of dot points about what you could do, when the fire's coming down, you can't even read it, let alone remember it. Isn't that right? What you have is the fire plan has been rehearsed so often, you can actually carry it out as a series of action memories that are remembered because you can do it without thinking. That's the only way we can reliably. That's why, you know, emergency services had to train and train and train so that it's all in their action, not in their ideas. So, and that's why it is that people will have difficulty even saying what their name and address is when they come to an evacuation centre after having a really serious life-threatening experience. So therefore you're tuned for one thing only, and that is physical survival of a physical problem. But actually that only lasts for a short time. But what puts us into that adrenaline mode is threat. So the fire's a threat, but the next threat is, have I lost my house? Where will I sleep tonight? Is the insurance going to pay? What am I going to do about this? What am I going to do about that? Blah, 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 blah. They're all threats, aren't they? And they put us into adrenaline mode. But there's a big gap between the state we're in, which is to deal with a physical problem, and the skills we need, which is to negotiate a complicated financial argument with an insurance company. You know, what we'd feel like doing is punching them on the nose. But it doesn't actually advance our claim, does it?